Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 204 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And on this show, we are going to be talking about openers, the great opening tracks, our favorite opening tracks on the Canon records. And what are they? Well, stick around and find out. But first, let me introduce you to my partner in crime, my backwards traveler, my other leg, if you will. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, so good to see you. Always great to hang out with you. How you doing, brother?
Good, Tom. Happy to be here again. And I like when we do the episodes where we enumerate things and we rank things. People seem to like those the best. And you came up with a good topic for today. And I'm well. I'm doing very well. And fresh off the heels of seeing John Anderson up close.
That's right. Again, you had your dad and your brother with you. You went to go see John Anderson for what, the 50th, 53rd, or what is it?
including all the variations of yes, or probably close to 50 by now. Who knows? Wow. I don't think it's quite 50, but at least it's over 30, but not quite 40. I'll tell you that. And the man's 78. And he is playing with the Band Geeks, which is a band he found on YouTube of like really super professional musicians. The bass player is actually the bass player for Blue Oyster Cult for the last 20 years. And they are just phenomenal. He's singing all the Yes classics, a couple of 80s tracks, but mainly the 70s canon. And to see somebody 78 still sound so youthful by the music, it was great. And by the time this airs, I'll have seen him again because I'm going again on – we're recording this on Wednesday. I'm going again on Friday night in New York City to see him again. So by the time this drops, I'll have seen him twice. So, yeah, I'm going to go again. Yeah. And, but I'm good. And you recently – he's like the little – he's like the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps going and going.
Just keeps going. That's awesome.
You, thanks. Yeah. You, Tom, recently you got back from Vegas and saw the Beatles Love Show again.
Yeah. This is the second time, 10 years after my 40th. My uncle and my aunt flew over here to Phoenix from Michigan. We drove up to Vegas to see Love, which was his first time. And I was really happy about that because he's been talking about seeing Love for years now. And it was a great time, and it held up really well for me. I enjoyed it the second time around, and it wasn't as emotional as it was the first time, but there's still some bits that are really good, and can maybe get you a little teary eyed. But again, it was a great time, was had by all, and if you haven't seen it yet, please don't wait any longer. Book that flight to Vegas, get those tickets to see Love, and you can get a shirt like this, in the gift shop.
Is that a new one?
Oh, yeah. And, again, it was a great time. And then we drove the Hoover Dam, then we went to the Grand Canyon. And so we made, it was a quick 60-hour trip. And quickie 60-hour trip. And not much sleep there, but we had a great time, conversation and sightseeing and stuff like that. So
great pictures of the Grand Canyon. It looks like you guys had a wonderful time.
Yeah. And the thing is about that is pictures don't do it any justice. Oh. It's something you've got to see for yourself and take it all in. And,
you've never been, right?
First time. Yeah. So, But obviously, we're getting out, we're doing things. It's great to have that. Hopefully the big C word out of our lives or in the back of the rearview mirror, hopefully. But I know some people are still unfortunately getting it, but for us, we gotta get out there, we gotta see our shows.
That's it. We have to go. We gotta go. We have to go keep going and supporting our artists. And if we're going to go, we're going to go. So, Tom, you got a little – go ahead.
Yeah, I do. I just do want to say one thing. Last week, Gordon Lightfoot was here. And
oh, God, yeah.
Show, but he canceled the show, unfortunately.
Did you have tickets?
No, I didn't go. Just because of all everything else that's been going on, it's these last 3 weeks with, you know, traveling and birthday stuff and all.
Yeah.
But unfortunately he canceled the show. I don't know. It was due to illness. So I hope he gets a speedy recovery and can get out there and continue to.
I hope
the man is 85. I mean, and wow.
85, and let me tell you, when I saw him last summer, he was frail. He played for an hour and 10 minutes. He was very frail, but he sounded, for 85, for 84, he had a good little tight band, and he played all the hits, everything you wanted to hear, and that was it. He just is so frail, so I know that you enjoy his music, too.
I do, and hopefully I'll get an opportunity to see him.
So, hopefully.
But yeah, I did get something in the mail today that I was very excited about. I saw this like 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was up for auction, and I won it on eBay. And what this is a Mexican promo 12-inch vinyl for Ebony and Ivory. And this is very cool cover. It's a kind of like an etching style. Or an etched style drawing of Paul McCartney. And
of that photograph, yeah.
Yeah, that photograph. And, you know, I'll put a picture of this on the Facebook page and on in our Instagram and Twitter pages as well. So everybody that's just doing audio can go and check it out on our pages' social media. So very cool. And there's that. It's got Ebony and Ivory on side A. Side B's got
Ebano E Marfil.
Yes, so Rain Clouds, and then it's got Ebony and Ivory.
Nubes de Luvia. Rain Clouds, hide the sun.
There you go.
Really can I cool. see? Well, can I see really, the record, Tom? Can I see the? Can I see the label?
That right now, getting that right now, my friend. And
apologies for the audio only people.
Yeah.
So we've got a nice little white EMI label there with the MPL juggler there.
Right. See it there.
Turn it, and pull it closer. Hold me closer, Tiny Dancer. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. So very excited to have this. It plays at 45 RPM.
Revolutions per minute.
Yes.
Nice find. Nice find.
Yeah. Thank you. And also, I do want to remind everybody that our quest to get to 2,000 subscribers for our YouTube channel continues. We are at 1.45.
We are the little engine that could. Yeah, that is just right. Keep going.
Right. Thank you for all the new subscribers coming in. And hopefully, you know, if you're new and you're watching, hopefully you'll subscribe and join the family here. Because I tell you, this has been... you know, wonderful since we've gotten on the YouTube and connected with so many people, and it's been great. So when we hit that 2,000 subscriber goal, we'll have another little giveaway. And one of those giveaways is I have an extra copy of the McCartney Legacy. If you don't have this yet, this will be part of the giveaway. So
also then the suitcase too is going to be also part of the giveaway as well.
The suitcase, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But that means you won't be able to enter the contest, though. You know that, right?
I know.
Co-host can't enter.
Sorry. I know. But that's a nice, yeah, we're going to do a little giveaway. But yeah. Yeah, he doesn't need it anymore, folks. He's, you know, he doesn't need it.
Yeah, well, I got the signed copy that you got for me, so... You know,
that's
I
right.
got an extra one now. I got an extra one now. So I am going to present it to the fans who may not have the book yet.
And if you haven't
don't have the book yet, what's wrong with
what's you? Wrong with you? Come on.
Come on, everybody. Come on, people. Anyways, as I said at the beginning, we're talking about album openers, the opening tracks, the track that sets the tone for the albums. And we're going to count down our 10 favorite here. So, Andy. You know, what do you look forward to when you think about an opening track? You know, what does that, you know, mean to you?
Most of the time, I look for a song that really is optimistic, uplifting, and really kind of, or so majestic that it sets the mode and the mood for the whole record. Now, going through my list that I kind of just came up with a few hours ago, Most of them are that way. And if no, those of you that know your Beatle history, George Martin used to call this track a potboiler. He liked the Beatles to come up with a potboiler, you know, on for opening tracks of their albums. So I guess Paul tried to do a lot of the same suit with a lot of his classic albums. Most of his albums have really, for the most part, but some of them don't. But most of mine do generally favor that kind of optimism. But that's what I look forward. What about you? Not always, but I don't always look for that. But sometimes, most of the time, I do.
Yeah.
You?
I mean, again, I mean, something that lets us, you know, gives us insight to what the rest of the album is going to be. I mean, it tells a story, right? If it's a concept album, it's the beginning. It introduces the album to us. And, you know, I think there's quite a few really classic McCartney openers out there. Some of them. That's worse. But anyways, no, I love a great opener. I love it when it rocks. I'm not the biggest fan of like a slower song opening an album unless it's you know, an album full of ballads, which
right.
is fine. That's fine, too. But when I think of a great McCartney opener, I think of something that really drives, you know, and gets you really excited about listening to the rest of the album.
Yeah, and it's something he's done, you know, a great job with. Most of them open that way. They really do.
Yeah, exactly. So why don't you go ahead and start us off with number 10, my friend.
So we're talking about optimistic and bubbly openers. This one is actually not, but I've come to enjoy it because it's so different, because most of Paul's albums do open up that way. But number 10 for me, I'm going to go with the opening of Egypt Station, and that's I Don't Know. Very rare for him to open up with a, you know, ballad like that. That's very mournful and questioning and, you know, where am I going wrong? I don't know. It's not like him to open up a record like that. You know, it's really not. Look at all of his albums. They're for the most part, you know, there might be some, I mean, London Town, or there might be some softer type songs. You know, but nothing like this. That's really kind of mournful, but I think it works well, and I do think it sets the mood for the whole record and kind of gives that kind of chill vibe to it. And I you know, Egypt Station is gonna be now 5 years old in a few months, which
wow.
think about that, right?
Yeah.
How crazy is that? So I'm gonna go with the opening set. I like how it links with the opening station into that ballad of I Don't Know, and I really like that he chose it as a single. Even though it wasn't really single material.
Right, right. And we all know the singles are, you know, handled differently than what they used to. I mean, if this was the classic, you know, years for, you know, 60s to up until the early 90s, you know, this could have done something for Paul. Maybe. Released
maybe.
This time. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
10 for you.
Good pick. Good pick. Great riff. I love how this riff just opens this album, and that's Save Us from New. This is just a great, great rocker that just really brings it. I love the dan, 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 you know, it just really crunches. Great chorus, keep on, you know, sending your love, you know, it just really, again, is that kind of positive feel, positive vibe, and just really gets you excited to hear the rest of the album. This is just really smokes. I really just, and, you know, his vocals are great, and throughout, and yeah, this one really kicks, man.
I love that. You've got something that could save us. Boom, boom, pow.
Boom.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very exciting song. It's very, you know, you get charged. This is like one of those workout songs, you know.
Keep on sending your
energetic.
Love.
Whoa. Yeah, very energetic track.
Very.
Yeah, love it.
And it rolls right into me because that was my number 9. that was my number 9 pick. So that worked out quite well. Totally agree with you on that one. Everything about Save Us is one of the best openers of his, I would say, the last 20 years or so. Easily, well, out of all of his output, just everything that you said, you know, love it. Got to see him do it live. It really works as a live number. I think we had a live version of it on that deluxe edition of New. You had a live version of Save Us
right,
from Japan.
Right, yep.
Let's take Japan, a quick. Right. I happen to just have it right here. Let's
take
just make sure.
Take a gander.
Yeah, on the bonus audio disc, you had a live version from Tokyo on there. So definitely worked well, and I think he kept into the set for quite a while too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Got to see him do that as well. That was awesome.
Yep. So that was my number nine. Your number.
Your nine. Okay.
That was my nine.
Moving right along.
Yes, sir.
Something. I mean, I guess you know. I guess maybe you can throw this in with the I don't know, kind of feel. Although this is a little bit more up tempo, and I love the opening bass line to this, and that's Lonely Road from Driving Rain. And this really gives you, and it really gives you a feel, you know, of what he was going through, you know, at the time, even though he was, I think he was already seeing, you know, Heather, you know, by the time that this album came out, but you really get a sense of the emotions that he was dealing with after Linda's death. And you know, and dealing something with like, you kind of want that later on in the album, you know, but this album actually is kind of a little bit more up-tempo. I like the, you know, the guitar playing in it, you know, and Try to Get Over You. You know, I really just, you know, really like the lyrics to this. And I think it's, you know, it gets a sense because there's a lot of that emotional stuff, you know, throughout Driving Rain. I mean, I know a lot of people dismiss this album. And that's fine. You know, that's your right. But this album really gives you a sense of what McCartney's feeling and where his emotions are, you know, especially with this opening track. So Lonely Road for me, number nine.
Number nine. Yeah, I had a feeling that would probably work its way into it. Very much like that kind of not really very optimistic song at all.
Right.
Nice pick as well. I'm not surprised. I had a feeling you were going to pick that one. Yeah. I did.
Okay.
Number eight.
Number eight for you, buddy.
I'm a big one. I have a lot. I mean, how many of them? Let me see. One, two, three, four, five. So five out of my 10 have album title cuts in there. I don't
know. And it's funny you bring that up too, because there's so many times where that opening track will be the lead off single as well. So you've been listening to that lead off single for, you know, for a month, 2 months before the album comes out. Then you get the album or CD, you play, and it's the first damn track.
Yes. Yeah. And that happens. It happens to be the case with out of five of my 10. And that's with number eight for me. That's, I'm going to go with Tug of War, which another one, just a masterful song. I know you don't like the pushing and pulling in that, but I think it's just a wonderful songwriting composition. George Martin through and through. It's like a Beatle track. It really is like a Beatle track. And the bridge, you know, the bridge is what makes that song. In years to come, you know, they may discover what the air we breathe and life we lead are all about. But it won't be tuned into that to me. And then the strings, everything about that. That's why that the Tug of War has to, and for my top 10, has to be a top 10 album opener, hands down, for me.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. I'm sure there's going to be another track from the next following album somewhere.
Somewhere. Where, somewhere. Though? What?
Yeah, and I thought about that song too, but, you know, for me, it just didn't make the cut, unfortunately.
Because it's the first musical statement of John, after John, and that holds significance alone. You know, that's the first that's the first thing you're hearing, you know, and that's his statement. That's his statement, and it deserves, I think, it needs to be recognized as such.
Fair enough. Eight for me is the track that really shows what this band was going to be doing for the rest of its existence. And until McCartney 2, actually. And I'm going with Big Barn Bed from Red Rose Speedway. Exactly. Love that opening riff again. However, what I really love about it is those backing vocals. You know, the keep on sleeping in the big barn bed. You know, I just really sets the tone for what Wings is going to be for the rest. Like I said, that Wings sound, that upbeat, that positive, you know, that the great backing vocals that we get from Paul, Linda, and Denny, you know, and Denny and Linda mainly, but, you know, sometimes Paul does join in and, you know, in those backing vocals. And I just really, you know, again, in that song Kicks too, you know, we don't get a lot of that on that album, but
but it's a hell of an opener.
Yeah, it's a hell of an opener, and you know, they opened the James Paul McCartney special with that song as well. So you know, he must have thought pretty highly of it to do that. And I think it's a really a great, you know, kick in the butt.
Yeah, and a real hell of a live version that you got with that Wings Live Over Europe CD too. You know, but a great album opener. Not surprised I made it there. Seven for me. Gonna go over. We're gonna jump ahead about about almost 30 something years after Red Rose Speedway. We're gonna go all the way up to 2005's Chaos and Creation with Fine Line. Boy. The opener to Chaos and Creation in the Backyard, Fine Line. It's got that, you know, you don't really know what to expect when you hear that track. You're like, well, at the beginning of it, you hear this, woo, 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 and then it goes right into the song proper. And I think it's Paul, you know, kind of really picking a great track to open up an album. You know, there is a fine line, and it really kind of contains the album's name in the song, you know, between Chaos and Creation.
Chaos and Creation.
It's setting the mood for the record. And I love everything through with the piano playing in it. Whatever is more important to you. And then it just ends. And then the way it just abruptly ends. It's a fine line. Perfect. Perfect album opener. And, it's up there. I think, you know, that's why I like it better than I Don't Know. That's why I had it put it at seven. In terms of recent.
And I put it at seven as well, my friend.
Hey, we matched up again.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I just love, you know, his piano playing in this one. It's you know, reminiscent of all the great, you know, piano rockers that he's done throughout his career, whether you're talking Lady Madonna, you know, on and on and on. These piano rockers really... really kick it for me, and I, you know, I like the, you know, the come on back to me. So many great lines in that one. I do love the, you know, there's a fine line between chaos and creation. Great lyrics throughout this whole album.
And he plays all the instruments himself.
You know, no, Nigel really did a fine, you know, job, you know, producing this one and getting Paul off, you know. Get him off his ass, and you know, give him the encouragement to do something different, and he did. But this was a great opening rocker from Paul to start off Chaos and Creation in the Backyard.
So. Not surprised we matched up there either, brother. Good pick. Number six for me. Tom mentioned it a few songs ago. It makes its appearance, and that for me is Pipes of Peace, and it sits it there at number six. Yeah, you right. knew it was going to be in this list, yes. people. Yes. You knew it was going to be in this list. You all probably thought it would have been one or two. It's not that high, trust me. But I had to put Pipes of Peace in there. You know, right. I'm a sucker for that song. Everything about it, the beginning of it, again, Pipes of Peace, Tug of War, they both have this kind of ambient noise that start the track before they go into the track. I like that about Pipes of Peace and Tug of War. And then the melody is just the best, one of the best of all times. You know, McCartney, he's just effortless when it comes to doing that stuff, you know. And then getting the children's choir in it to sing on it as well. You know, it's just a song about peace. You know, and it's got that Christmassy vibe to it, you know. And you hear the kids singing Pipes of Peace all through it. And then it comes and cycles all the way back. You've got the tabla, you've got the use of the tabla in it, which is great. Yes. And it cycles back to the way the song ends, the way the song begins, which is why I think that's one of the strongest examples of songwriting he's done and arrangement. So Pipes of Peace, six.
Okay. You know, I do, again, it just missed my list. You know, hearing you talk about it, you know, I'm very positive about that song too. I think it's great. It's kind of almost in a way, you know, his Imagine.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. You know, in a way, but, you know, yeah, the tabla, the, you know, everything about that song cooks, but, unfortunately didn't make my list. And I can't wait to see, you know, who has it on their list. So again, you know, in the comment section, let us know what you think. You know, about that pick and if it's in your list. Six for me. Again, you know, kind of sets the tone for the album. A lot different from the single version, and we're talking about Coming Up from McCartney 2. Really, yeah, really dig. I, you know, I'm one of the ones that prefer the studio version over the live version, but I'm not saying the live version is bad, because that's awesome as well.
Yeah.
I just kind of like, you know, prefer the studio version. And again, it's fun. You know, you get you know, so a lot of weird stuff going on in there, music wise, technically wise, and I love how he plays around his vocals in that. Again, it's just a simple love song that he just you know, has a lot of fun with experimenting, and I just think it's a good way to start McCartney 2. I mean, some people might say that this is the only good thing about McCartney 2.
They might,
you know.
They might,
but give it a chance, and maybe you'll come to appreciate it.
Because it was so different. It was such a different sound for him. You know, that's why it's no surprise that John Lennon liked that, because he was like, oh, that's Paul being a little bit different. You know, so he goes, forget the live version. I like the one where he sounded all weird. And that's, yeah.
It's different, but has the same, you know, McCartney themes. You know, it's love, you know, and...
yeah,
that's all you need.
But it comes across in a totally, totally different way.
Totally different way that you're not used to, and it makes it interesting. It makes a McCartney, you know, ballad, you know, a simple McCartney ballad, see it sound a lot more interesting than what
funky.
It probably
I'd say fit yeah. in a funky way.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And what was going on there in 1979 up there in Scotland, you know? But he was all by himself, so
something was coming up.
Yes, it was. Five for me. Five for me is, and I'm sure Tom's got it. I would think Tom has this on his list because it's such an iconic album opener. And that's going to be Too Many People from Ram at number five for me. Talk about setting the mood. You know, this is this is his opening shot at John and Yoko. That's, you know, thinly veiled in the lyrics. And but it wasn't all of Ram, even though John thought it was all of Ram. But this one song, Too Many People, set John and triggered John to think that every little lyric in Ram was all about him, even though this one was about John and Yoko. And, I think it's a wonderful piece of, you know, production in terms of Paul and Linda. I mean, obviously all of Ram was jointly done by them, but. You know, and she, you can hear her a lot on it, you know, the double play on words, you know, piece of cake or piss off cake, you know, he was very slick about that. He really was, you know, and then the whole, you know, that you know, that was your first mistake. You know, you're listening to that as a Beatle fan in 1971, you're going, that was your first mistake. You took your lucky break, you know, wow, this is like some deep stuff. And then of course it rocks out of like it does and jamming and, all those great session players that were on Ram, McCracken and Spinoza, they do an awesome job on it. But it's got a little bit of that McCartney, you know, edge to it, where he's trying to be sweet but also be a little salty at the same time. So yeah, it's Too Many People, easily top five.
Gotcha. Five for me is the first of my, you know, title is the same title as the album, the title track, if you will, and it's my favorite song on this album. I think I picked this as my favorite on the album. That's Off the Ground. I really, really love Off the Ground. The song Off the Ground. I think it's a good opener, and I love the single when it came out. Really got me excited about the record, even though it wasn't the first single. I think it might have been the first single here. It wasn't Hope of Deliverance.
Hope,
the first single.
Hope of Deliverance was.
Yeah. But it was a European single, right?
It wasn't here.
Yeah. So maybe Off the Ground. I got to go back and check that. However, I love the the Robbie McIntosh's kind of slide guitar playing through that, and I love his kind of Paul's falsetto vocals on this one, and I love the Off the Ground, la 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 la, very reminiscent of the O's from My Love,
yeah,
you know, very singable track, very approachable track. I mean, it's good. You know, I think it's a great opener for that album, and unfortunately, the rest of it didn't do too much.
Wow. I'm really surprised that made the cut. I'm really surprised that made your cut.
Yeah, no. I was thinking about putting it higher in the list, like, 9 or 10. But just, thinking about this track, just going out and singing in my head and how infectious it is for me just to, go back and sing the song. And, I was just playing that copy of Off the Ground that I got at the fest. And, it just felt so good hearing that song, to me. It's just one of those songs that just puts a smile on your face. And I think that's a great way to start an album,
It is. It certainly does. I'm glad you warmed up to it a little bit. It didn't make my top ten, but I agree with your sentiments totally with that track. Listen, he loves it so much, folks. He's got it right above his shoulder over there. See?
Yeah, that's true. All right, number four for you, my friend.
Four for me. Album track title time again, and we're gonna go with 1978 and London Town. At number four.
I was just like, where is he going to put it?
Melodic, simple, ballady, folky, whatever you want to call it. It's not a rocker, but most of London Town is not, bar one or two tracks. And talk about, you look at the album cover of London Town. It's gray. You listen to that track. And between the album cover, the artwork, the design, that track, you're instantly transported to, like, London when you hear that song. Someone somewhere has to know. I could listen to it all day. It's a little different. It's not a rocker. It's not a big barn bed. It's not a Venus. It's not a Save Us. It's not a Fine Line. But it's for 1978. Paul, right, kind of just low key. I've loved it. I like that. Walking down the sidewalk on a you really hear Paul and Linda and Denny's vocals, backing vocals, shine a lot on London Town, especially towards the end, And again, ending the song the way it begins, Silver Rain. And I love that the usage of the word Silver Rain was falling down. Love that. I've always enjoyed that.
Kind of Penny Lane-ish in a way, where you're seeing the, people watching, or you're seeing the people on the side of the street, kind of like he did with, Penny Lane.
Right. Ordinary people it's impossible to meet. Yeah, right. Very, very, very much Penny Lane. Very, very much to the ire of John Lennon writing about, he can't stand how he writes about other people. But London Town, yeah, that's number four.
All right, yeah, good pick. All right, my second of the title tracks, same title, same name album, name of the album. Sorry. And when you read the story, it's fascinating that this great piece came out from all the, the bad luck that he was having, losing band members and just being, Paul, Linda, and Denny.
Mm.
And they go somewhere that is very challenging because the place probably isn't, finished, but that's, band on the run. And just amazing what came out of those sessions and between those three. And Band on the Run is amazing. Look, I know we can constantly say that we're fatigued on the song, but we have to recognize its greatness, its place in Paul's songography or discography, whatever you want to say, however you want to say it. It's very important. It's going to be the song that he's remembered for, I think. And number one single back in 74. And it just sets the tone for the album, and you're listening to greatness. I mean, as soon as you hear that, that opening lick, you know you're in for something very exciting.
Yeah, a little synthy work, all that.
Yeah. You're in for something special when you hit play on this.
I'll continue there because it's my number three. So I had Band on the Run at three, we linked up again. You're hearing, this is like his, what they were waiting for with McCartney when they wanted to hear Abbey Road again. They had to wait until December of 73 with Band on the Run. They got it. Why? Because you're hearing multi-part suites in one song, stuck inside these four walls, and then boom, then it goes to something else. If I ever get out of here, and then boom, Rain exploded with a mighty crash, and then boom, now you're right into the meat and potatoes of the song and the chorus. And that's what resonates, and that's why it's such a huge, you know, success. Even if it's for a single of close to five minutes, I think it was the running time of that. But that's what people wanted from McCartney in 1970, and it took him a while to build back up to that, but he had to do it his own way. And boy, did he do it with Band on the Run. I know you can say you were fatigued, but like you just said, it doesn't really matter. You have to recognize its greatness where it is, even though, you know, we might be sick to death of it, but it's what he's going to be remembered for. And it absolutely has to be one of the iconic albums. It's one of the best recognized albums of the 70s. The album cover, everything about it. So it has to be.
And you have to give credit to Jeff Emmerich as well, who was the engineer who won a Grammy for his work on this album. Well deserved.
Even though he didn't want to go there. He did not want to go to Lagos and have to do it.
Right.
But, you know, he did.
Right. He did.
Yeah, and it's really nice though, because the McCartney Legacy book really ends with the end of Band on the Run and how quickly that was done. And I always thought that was such a bigger, longer thing in terms of the making of the album, but compared to Red Rose Speedway, it was nothing.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Red Rose Speedway was done over the course of basically 2 years, you know, a year and a half, all of 72 and a little bit of 73, whereas Band on the Run was just basically, you know, the summer of 73. They came back and finished it up in the fall of 73, and that was it, done. Yeah, right. But I can't fault you there, brother. What do you got?
Well, my number three, very exciting time for me, being, introduced to the Beatles and just getting into them in the, 87, around 87, really getting into them in 88. And then, 89, you get a song that is very Beatlish. Great way to open up a comeback album. My Brave Face, which, unfortunately didn't do as well single wise as it should have. However, if you're a Beatle fan, you are loving this track because this is just touching.
It's all the nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Thank you. Perfect word for the song My Brave Face. It's just great, that the collaboration between him and Elvis Costello really just gave him the jolt that he needed, and for this, I don't know if you want to say comeback, but listen, he wasn't.
Well, it wasn't a comeback, but it was considered then, but after, a couple of years there, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, but anyways, lyrically, this is great stuff. You guys know the words to this song. It's great. I love the opening, my brave, he carries that, face note, and it's just
unaccustomed as I am.
Yes.
Oh man.
Yes.
It really, it's
perfection.
Total. Everything about it, The lyric, ever since you went away, it's a little bit, it gets a little wordy, but it's so good. And you got to give Elvis a lot of credit for that track. I think you do.
Yeah. As I threw away another TV dinner from the table I set for two. Exactly.
Take me to that place.
There you go. Yeah. Very Beatle-ish.
Very, very Beatle-ish. Yeah. That was your three, brother?
That was my three. Go ahead.
I thought that would be a little bit higher, I'm going to be honest.
No. Okay. Well, let me hear two and one, maybe.
Two for me. I'm going to go with, I got to go with this one. It's another album title track. I have to go with it. Venus and Mars Rock Show.
Yep.
Gotta do it. I'm not sure. Is that your two?
Maybe.
Yeah. Venus and Mars Rock Show, the full album version, not the single edit, as presented on the album. Talk about, thematic concept albums. You look at, again, the album artwork, which, you look at it with the red and the yellow and the black. It's totally, you put that on, and the Venus and Mars, you're thinking of planets and everything. And it was just so wonderfully designed and conceptualized. Opening up, sitting in the stands of a sports arena, waiting for the show to begin. Right. You're like, oh man, this could really work as a live number. And then, of course, he opens up with it on the tour. you know, red lights, green lights, strawberry wine, a good friend of mine. Like, boom. Yeah. Then right into freaking rock show. And so I used a little soft opener and right into boom. Right. What's that man holding in his hand? Looks at him. That is just, yeah, that is just, you know, that kicks. And I mean, the live version of Wings of America is great too, but the studio one on Venus and Mars is great too. Because then you get that little nice little outro that you don't get on anything live, you know. That little kind of coda.
Wiggle straight.
Right. You get the little coda fade out, which goes right into lovely into Love and Song. But the key changes, you know, the lights go down, they're back in town, okay. Back in town, you know. You know, I don't think the that's why when he did play it live in 2010, I don't think he wanted to say in my green metal suit I'm preparing to shoot up the city. I think that was too punky then to sing, you know, in the modern era, you know, in the ring at the end of my I can't see a 74-year-old Paul singing at the ring at the end. The ring at the end of my nose makes me look rather pretty. He should have, you know, he teased that little opening, and I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna play Venus and Mars rock show into Jet just like he did in 76, and he didn't, but it was still cool to hear it live represented in some form. And Venus and Mars rock show is the one of the most iconic openings to an album, to a concert set list ever made, and that's why I have it at 2.
Tension mounts, you score an ounce.
Olay.
You know, yeah. Yes, Venus and Mars is in rock shows is my number 2 as well. This is again, like you said, the album cover, the song. When you get the album cover, you know, right away, you this tells you what it is. It's Venus and Mars. You know, again, the opening, I think it sets the track for the rest of the album. It's produced wonderfully. The sound, I mean, this is a great sounding record as well. This whole thing just really cooks this album. And you know, and I know Venus and Mars is held pretty highly, you know, with all of us, you know, Macca fans. But with this album, this medley, if you will, and I think he's got that in the back of his mind too, going when he's creating Venus and Mars rock show. I'm thinking in the back of his mind, he's going, this is going to be a kick-ass album. You know, I mean, not an album opener and a tour opener.
And a tour opener.
You know, opener. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was.
And I think that was, you know, Wings was entering that next phase. He had gone through the 71 to 73 version of Wings. Right. He had gotten another band back together. Wings has existed now for about, a lot of Venus and Mars was done in 74. 3 or 4 years now Wings has existed. He's really ready to take the next level with Wings. I want to play live. I've got Junior's Farm under my belt as a great smash hit single.
Right.
I've got a huge hit album under my belt with Band on the Run. Now I want to take it to the next level with Venus and Mars. And I want to make my splash. I'm going to go back and hit it. And when you look at the set list, most of the album, this tour, was built around Venus and Mars. Like eight out of the eight tracks, I think, are in the whole set list from that album. So that's why. Yeah, what are you going to say?
You're playing theaters, right? You want to take that next step. Venus and Mars rock show, screams arena rock to me. I mean, this opener was screams for arenas and stadiums. You know what I mean?
This was not a song. Right. This was not a song he was going to play even at any of the, think about all the tours that the European shows that they did in 72 and 73. They're past that now. You know, their Wings has become, even with the personnel changes, now a vehicle, right? I mean, they're branded as Wings. It's not Paul McCartney and Wings anymore, which Band on the Run was. Venus and Mars is being branded as Wings. Like, okay, it's done well. You're going to call this Wings, Venus, and Mars, and it's the first album by a new lineup, and it smashes because of that. And that album, that opener, sets the tone for that period of Wings of 75, 76, into a little bit of 77 before they start to fracture again.
Think about it, though. I mean, when Wildlife comes out, what do? They put a hype sticker, or they call it Wings, right?
Yep.
And then we know from there that he had to go to Paul McCartney and Wings, okay? Venus and Mars comes out, what do? They put another sticker on there with Wings, and thankfully they were able to, you know, grow with Wings. People know what Wings is now.
Yeah.
You know, the success of Band on the Run. So he was able to finally get it to where it's a band now. I mean, it's a, you know, yes, it's a band. Yeah, I know people go back and forth about whether or not they're a band or not. They're a band.
That is the most, in my opinion, that is the most complete band album that Wings as a band did. I know Speed of Sound is a little more democratic in terms of the other people having tracks on it, but thematically, structurally, band participation, singing, I think...
Three different vocalists. You still got three different vocalists on Venus and Mars.
Right. I think Venus and Mars succeeds as the most complete package of a being branded as a band. Even better than Speed of Sound. Certainly better than Red Rose Speedway. Obviously better than Band on the Run. Obviously better than... I mean, Back to the Egg, yes, that's a band thing, but it was the last gasp, really. Maybe Venus and Mars and Back to the Egg could kind of play, you know, second fiddle with each other, because that was another conceptual album made by a tight band, and I could see Back to the Egg being like a second cousin to Venus and Mars, but definitely more so than London Town and Speed of Sound.
Right.
Easily.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Andy, let's get to the number ones, buddy. What do you got?
You already mentioned it, and you summed it up so great. And that's from Flowers in the Dirt, My Brave Face. That is the one that takes me back to my childhood and puts me back in my happy place with the video, the album, the first song on the track, the first song on the album. It was like a Beatles song. Everything about it. You so wonderfully described it. It's interesting to hear how the song grew when you hear now the demos and how I do think the album, the version that's on the album is the best version of it. I know there was like a faster version of it that him and Elvis did.
Right.
But everything about it, you know, I love that part in the documentary where Paul just says, you know, take me to that place. He goes, that's just place. Really, that's me and John. That's it. And it's okay for me, as much as it's a good song, I like it as much because it's Paul. This is the song where Paul was like, I'm okay with my Beatle past. I'm okay with it. I'm going to embrace it. And I'm going to be, this is how I'm going to go out as my legacy.
This is when we was fab.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It's him being okay with it after dealing with it for so many years, or close to 20 years of having to deal with it in the wake of the Beatles breakup, in the wake of John's death, in the wake of his kind of commercial slump there in the mid-80s, to now say, okay, I'm okay with this, and I'm going to open up a fresh album with a new band, and I'm going to call it My Brave Face. And I think even calling it My Brave Face is a pretty bold statement as well. You know, I'm calling it My Brave Face because of what I've been through, and I think that also goes into it a little bit too. And, it's one of those songs that unfortunately died after the tour, and we never heard it live again. Sadly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And this should be a mainstay in his set list, in my opinion. This is just
purely for the Costello, for the Costello connection.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But that's,
I can see this song being a hit, you know, in any of his tours since, you know.
Yeah.
Whether you're talking 2000s, 2010s, you know, this should be a mainstay.
It should have been. It really should have been. Yeah. But that's my number one. What do you got, partner?
All right. Well, you talked about it earlier, and I'm going with the opening to Ram. Too many people. There's a lot to say, you know, about this song. I mean, we've already said it, you know, multiple times on this show. But yeah, I love the opening. I love the drums. The opening drums to it, and then he just comes out and just starts belting, you know, too many people. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we got to say, you know, because maybe he is now, you know, preaching practices. But hey, listen, back then, you know, he thought other people were doing it, and he wanted to, you know, voice.
Yeah, two other people. Yeah. Yeah. Two other people in particular.
Right. Yes. True. But as we know that he didn't stop, or I shouldn't say that. But anyways, this track is great. It's a great vocal. It's a good kickoff track because you know, it is a, it's acoustic heavy, right? This album, and I think this is a great way to. I love, you know, to open the album. It's just a hard acoustic rocker.
And then a really rocking outro that just kind of just right. goes out, you know.
Electric guitar outro on that is great. Lyrically, it's fantastic. I mean, if you would listen to, if you put McCartney and then, you know, Ram, you know, side by side, you would think to yourself, this is not the same artist, because lyrically, you know, McCartney is just so simple. And I think here with Ram, you know, the lyrically wise, I mean, it's such a big leap, you know, from McCartney to Ram. Mm. But it's, you know, nonetheless, it's fantastic.
Well, show. it was the songwriting with bringing Linda on, coming to New York and working on it with, you know, top session musicians. You know, this wasn't a homespun affair. This was going to be a full on, let's try to, you know, up it a little bit and then do it with a little bit of venom. And that's what you hear in this song. And, he was hurt. And I understand why he was saying it. You know, he's saying, enough of this crap. I'm pissed off, and I'm going to tell you it. I'm going to tell you that I'm pissed off, and I'm going to do it in a nice song. I'm going to do it in a tuneful way. I'm not going to come right out and say it like in John would, but I'm going to put some sugar, you know, some sugar on it.
Right. And I love how, you know, he does, you know, this, that was your first mistake, and then later on mm-hmm. he goes, that was your last mistake. It's a wonderful song.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was my number one, and this was great. Couple, you know, in the future we'll do the closing tracks, and I want to give a shout out to a fan of ours, Nick, because actually when I suggested this to you a little while later, a fan of ours, Nick, he messaged me and said, "Hey, I got an idea for a show. How about talk about the closing tracks?" And I was like, that's funny, because he just, you know, messaged Andy about it. So you know, great minds, as they say. But yeah, so that was our list. Again, this is our list. If you think it's wrong, write down your list in the comment section, and we'll tell you you're wrong. I look forward to seeing your list. Let us know in the comment section. Again, please subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. We really want to get to that 2K goal by the end of the year. So again, thank you to everybody that has subscribed, and to all of our past subscribers. We really appreciate you guys sticking with us all these years. So Andy, what do you got coming up, my friend?
I might do a little recap of Record Store Day, which this is dropping on Record Store Day on this our episode, right. 204 is dropping on the 22nd. So that is Record Store Day, depending on how I do. There's a couple things I'm looking for. Obviously, the Half Speed Master, Red Rose Speedway. I may do one for my channel. It depends on how I do. I'm not as brave as my co-host. I don't get up at 2 in the morning and wait in line. But if I have anything to grab, that I'll share it on there as well. Possibly another review. I might do a review of the Anderson concert as well, because I'll have seen that as well the second time to do that. But that's pretty much it for me with my own stuff. And what about you? I know it was on a little hiatus. Not long.
A little hiatus. No. We'll be back on May 1st, and we're going to be doing our own 50th anniversary of Red Rose Speedway, and that'll be a lot of fun. So make sure you reach us or find us on our Talk More Talk YouTube channel, and please subscribe to that as well. And that'll be coming, like I said, on May 1st. So, but for us, we've got Luca coming up real soon, right? We're going to do a little battle with an album that was released differently in the U.S. as it was in the U.K. a little differently in the U.K. So that'll be fun, and we'll have some special guests for that. But like I said, a lot of good stuff coming your way soon. So everybody out there, thank you very much. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Please, if you have any comments, you want to tell us how much you like us or hate us, or if you got an idea for a show, you know, send it our way, and we'll take a look at it. As always, Andy, it's great to see you, my friend. We'll be talking real soon. And everybody out there, as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
See you.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.